I'd like to acknowledge Australia's First Nation people as the traditional custodians of the land, and for this episode in particular, the Wurundjeri people. I pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging.
For me, one of the things with Cabernet is it's a constant. You know, other varieties come and go, but Cabernet is a constant from a Margaret River perspective, and many other regions of the world. It's always the yardstick by which you measure the quality of the vintage, because there's such lovely age-worthy wines.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Glenn Goodall is a senior winemaker at Xanadu Wines in Margaret River. In his time, he has won countless trophies and awards for his craft. He joins me today to tell me how a surfer from Northland, New Zealand, is now one of Australia's most prolific winemakers. Hi, Glenn. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, great to be here, Shantae.
It's lovely to finally chat to you. I've been following your wines and your story for quite some time, and we've never met in person. Tell me about how you decided to move from Northland all the way over here to Margaret River.
I was back in the day, I was only 19 at the time, and my mum lived in Port Macquarie in northern New South Wales. So, I went over to Port Macquarie on a bit of a surfing holiday, and I couldn't bludge off mum forever, so I ended up getting a job in a vineyard, and which subsequently led to doing vintage. Once I got the bug for wine, ultimately it led me over here to Western Australia, where my wife grew up, given that she's also a winemaker. And Port Macquarie was a bit of a one-horse town. There was a lot more going on in the wine industry here in Margaret River.
I love that. You sum that up in a nutshell in about 3 seconds. Well done.
No worries.
Tell me about when you first moved from Northland. What were your first thoughts of Australia?
It's all just exciting, you know. When you come to a new country, it's all really exciting. And Port Macquarie was, a lovely part of the East Coast, and the fact that it's a tourist town right on the beach, being able to go surfing every morning, it was just great fun and just excitement, and just a lot more choices, just with respect to everything, basically, just with a bigger economy.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the world, and there's certainly some nice beaches to kind of grab a barrel or two. Cassegrain Wines was, you know, in Port Macquarie and really your foundation estate. You spent 9 years there, which is a huge amount of time. Tell me about what those first days were like walking into Cassegrain.
I was actually working in the vineyard planting at Cassegrains, and they kind of said, oh, look, this young Kiwi guy's a good worker. Let's give him a job in the winery. And the minute I walked into the winery, I just loved the smell of the place and the just the feel of being in the winery. And that led to vintage. And vintage is just such a, you know, back then in particular, it was just such a wonderful part of the year, part of the season, because there's so much camaraderie going on. You really feel as though you're part of a team. And there's just so much energy happening in the winery just at such an important time of the year. So once I got the bug there, that was me. I was hooked. I found myself in Bordeaux the same year. My first vintage was in 1990 in Cassegrains, and I found myself in Bordeaux in the Northern Hemisphere summer of that year, and I was hooked ever since then.
And with places like that, do they encourage you to go and do vintage somewhere else? Is that, I mean, I imagine it's at that early stage, it's all funded by yourself to go traveling. What was Cassegrain like in terms of saying, head off for a bit and then come back?
Because at that stage it was very, very early. I wasn't 100% sure that was what my career would end up being. I just knew that I really liked it. I was only 19 at the time. But, they were all for it and very, very much encouraging, you know, getting some more experience around the traps to help, you know, form, you know, good experience in the winemaking career, but also just at that age to get out and about and travel. And I think that's one of the great things about the wine industry is, through my whole journey, not just at Cassegrains, whereas at Cassegrain, John Cassegrain and Drew Noon, who were just great mentors and, you know, mentors who teach you about everything from the vineyard right through to the winemaking, but also just, you know, some life experience as well. When you're only 19 and you're in a new country, it's nice to have people, you know, who've got your back and want to see you succeed.
Oh, absolutely. So important to have those amazing figures around you that you can ask questions and that encourage you to grow. You went straight to Bordeaux. You went to a source of, wow, like amazing estates and a lot of history. What was it about Bordeaux that cemented the fact that you were like, this is going to be my new career?
Well, at that stage, being, you know, so young and just the opportunity to travel, it really opened my eyes that, you know, as well as expanding your horizons from a winemaking perspective, and by no means was I a winemaker at that stage. I was a cellar hand who was full of beans and just keen to travel and experience things. But I just realised how far that the industry could take you, just all over the world. With respect, I did a lot of vintages, northern and southern hemisphere, for until I was about maybe 27. I crammed in a lot of seasons in the northern hemisphere, and because Casagrandes was such an early vintage, I managed to cram in a couple of, I'd do a couple of seasons in the southern hemisphere and tack New Zealand onto the end of it. But I guess it was when I was in South Africa doing vintage over there. I remember the exact moment I was washing the dishes with Jill Finlayson, and I just turned to her and said, you know what, this is what I'm going to do for a career. And got back to Port Macquarie, and John Casagrande, he encouraged me and to go and study, and then just did the hard yards of going to Adelaide University and doing 4 years of study and making it a career.
I think that's awesome. I love when you can pinpoint a moment that you kind of, you know, kind of changed the direction of your life. I think that's amazing. But you seem to me someone that's a bit of a loyalist, because you have had some really long stints at places, and I think that's great, because like you said, you start to know the ins and outs, and if you've done more than just one role at a place, you really start to kind of appreciate, I don't know, the whole working mechanics of an operation, don't you?
Yeah, for sure. Like with the exception of a swag of vintages overseas, my sort of career was Casagrandes for 9 years. I started at one of Margaret River's first contract wineries. I was only there for 1 year, and through the building phase of that as well. And then, moved to Xanadu, and I've been here for, I'm in my 25th year here at Xanadu now. So it's been a long haul. But yeah, I agree that when you're working somewhere for a really long time, you get to know every facet of the business, and particularly in a leadership role, I find now, It's nice. I like this sort of the mantra that I don't ask anybody else to do anything that I don't have the ability to do myself or haven't done myself in the past. And that only comes with time, you know, when you've had the opportunity and work from the bottom up. And a lot of winemaking is it's not all swanning around tasting wines every day. A lot of it's cleaning and just some hard yards that all has to be done.
Yeah, that's so true. I really like that, because I think that it really makes for a very well-rounded individual when you are kind of, I suppose, like you said, at maybe the more top echelons now, but you know what it means to clean a tank or to get in and do those grungy jobs, you know. I think that that's it's really says something about you. Why did you move to Margaret River? Was it the surf that kind of called your name over that way? How did that kind of come about? You said also that you met Eloise, your vivacious, amazing partner. So tell me how that came about.
I did vintage in France, and I did a small stint working in a, you know, as a classic Anzac tour of duty, working in a pub in London, and I just I really wanted to get back to Australia, and it wasn't vintage at Casagrandes at the time. So I came back, and I was actually working in a boat building place down in Frio with my best friend who was living in Frio at the time. So, yeah, I borrowed his car, drove down to Margaret River, and just drove around a few of the wineries and just fell in love with the place down here. That was prior to meeting my wife. And I met my wife Ellie at Adelaide University, where she was studying winemaking as well. So, she came and did a vintage with me in Port Macquarie, and then we realised that, for both of us to sustain some winemaking careers, we needed to move to a bigger area, an area with a bigger wine industry. So, she being born and bred in Dunsborough, just north of Margaret River, we came back over here, and she came back at the time to Well, we actually had a brief stint in South Africa together first, and then we came back here. She went back to Cape Mentelle back in the mid-90s, and I started that contract facility and then moved to Xanadu. So, that's what sort of led me here, and I've just never left. I just love, you know, Margaret River is just such an amazing place, not just for winemaking, but just to raise a family, and just, you know, the fact that I've been for a surf a couple of times before work this week and went down to the beach for a swim this morning, it's pretty hard place to leave.
Yeah, I feel like it was the stupidest question to ask, but you never know why people do choose where they want to live. But Margaret River is one of my favourite places in the world, and I could easily see myself living there. So I don't blame you for the choices you've made, and it is such a special part of the world. I mean, between the two of you, between Eloise and yourself, her at Cape Mentelle and you at Xanadu, you must know absolutely every single person in the wine industry and what's happening in the business.
Oh, Margs is a pretty small, you know, it's a big industry, but it's still a small community, I guess, where, yeah, everybody does. It's just the whole vibe around the Margaret River wine community and community at large is fantastic, where people get involved. People certainly get involved in all sorts of aspects, whether it be volunteer work or a lot of the wine industry stuff, particularly in our little area in Budgetup with Voyager and Lewin Estate. It's you do know a lot of people, and you get to know vineyards as well, like as well as knowing the prime vineyards around the area. You obviously know your own vineyards like the back of your hand, but there's also, you know, healthy competition amongst a lot of the wineries when you're out there looking at fruit and sourcing fruit as well, because everyone wants to make the best wines, and so it pays to know people, and it pays to get out and about and just try and keep your finger on the pulse with everything that's happening in the community.
Well, you certainly must do that, because Xanadu wins a crazy amount of awards in wine shows. Why is that?
I've asked myself the same question, because it's one of those things where, because of our success, a lot of people have sort of said, oh, what's the secret? And there is no secret. It's honestly, I think, just really respecting the vineyard, walking a lot of rows so that you really understand what each block and in many cases, which parts of each block of vineyards can deliver. And as far as the winemaking goes, in all honesty, Shante, I've always had a keep it simple, stupid approach. I don't try and complicate too much in the winery, but really respect what's going on in the vineyard. And I would much rather preserve what the vineyard brings to the winery. And from that perspective, I mean by identifying and isolating areas of a vineyard or a block. And I don't really care what, you know, whether it's an open fermenter, a static fermenter, a rotary fermenter. I think it's more about actually identifying and capturing what that part of the vineyard's got. And then that just gives you a lot of light and shade when you go to put blends together, where you've got, just different aspects that are coming from the vineyard and just a bigger palette of colours to play with when you're putting blends together. So, yeah, that seems to resonate with people and with wine show judges and journalists. So, the keep it simple, stupid approach seems to be working. So we just stick with that. I think also it's worth recognizing too that it's not a one man band. It's an absolute team sport when it comes to winemaking. So, I've had a great team here at Xanadu over the journey. People past and present who have played a massive role in our success, and notwithstanding, it's not just people here at the winery, it's our growers and our vineyard team as well. It's one person doesn't make the wine. It's a team sport for sure.
Yeah, it's always good to recognize that, you know, it does take a village, and like you said, you can't do it alone, and you need a lot of input from other people and everybody to kind of pull their weight. I think it's interesting that you talked about the vineyard. On your website, it says you produce fruit-forward wines where the loudest voice in the glass is the vineyard, which I love. I think it's interesting to think of that, and you've put it really nicely when you talked about blends, because Burgundy is somewhere that has cemented that idea of identifying sight by taste alone. And, you know, I think that probably is the future of great wines. But when you're not necessarily putting it on the label saying this is this vineyard, we make it every single year, it's quite hard to communicate kind of how you identify the vineyard in the glass, I think, because like you said, you know the place, you know what it offers. But when we're tasting a final wine at the end, unless, you know, it's written in front of us, it's hard necessarily to identify that. But you talked a bit about making it into a blend. So that kind of gets me thinking, okay, well, then you're saying, okay, this has this beautiful kind of bright red fruit weight, whereas this is giving us some great tannins and earthy elements, and then we're kind of combining them to create that final product, I suppose. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's nice sometimes, you know, because we have several single vineyard wines, you know, from our Lagan estate and our Stevens Road vineyard in particular. Some of our most successful wines are blends from various vineyards, and looking at our Black Label Cabernet, for example, I find it's really important to have, that vineyard being the loudest voice in the glass. I love it when you open a bottle of wine, particularly Cabernet, and it just smells like home. So I often think about whether I'm at home or whether I'm in London. It doesn't matter. It's about when you put these blends together to try and get the best of what can come out of Margaret River Cabernet. And for me, that's a couple of things. It's that lovely, bright, as you said, that fruit-forward sort of purity element. There's definitely a leafy, bay leaf sort of more fresh element to the wine as well, but then having that lovely sort of suppleness. So I think when we're putting blends together, like, I'll tend to, like, keep it pretty simple with respect to the winemaking, press maybe two-thirds of the components relatively early to preserve that freshness and that brightness and that fruit forwardness, and maybe a third, or depending on the season, maybe a bit less, to do some extended maceration. And that just helps to give it some really lovely plushness, maybe a touch more of that savoury sort of character, but just so that you've got light and shade, so that when you put the blends together, they're not one-dimensional. They still want that brightness, but there's just a couple of other layers there that just make it a little bit more thoughtful. But I think I think that's why, you know, having that vineyard as the loudest voice in the glass is a kind of a mantra, where I think that identifies more of a real place rather than a person. You know, using Chardonnay as an analogy here, where, you know, I really want to taste where that's from and what that grape is in that vintage, rather than someone's oak budget or how much Malo you put it through or the alcohol, or just, you know, smear it with winemaking. It's much nicer, I think, when you're actually tasting a place rather than, a winemaking style or a winemaking personality.
I think you've said that so well, and it's something that I've noticed in the last maybe 3 years of wine judging around the country, where I feel like sometimes I can pick out a Xanadu wine and it's not because of a winemaking kind of trait. It's really because of the lack of winemaking and the more kind of restraint that I go, I think that's a Xanadu. And I think that that's a really huge compliment for your wines, because you start to go, oh, look at the fruit and look at all the detail in it. Look at the kind of judicious amount of oak that's being used. And I think that you can start to see them, but it's really through, like you said, those other discerning factors of vineyard.
Yeah, no, hopefully that's thank you. That's an amazing compliment to receive, because we do, that's the whole point, just tasting the pretty subtleties. They don't need to be, you know, smacked around the head with oak, and sometimes it's just those really bright, pure kind of wines that resonate, and they clearly seem to resonate with in the show system. And I think it's kind of cool when you don't really see too much winemaking artifact. It's more about the vineyard.
You make quite a few wines at Xanadu, and at a few different tiers, as you talked about, your single vineyards, your reserve wines. Is there a wine that you particularly look forward to making each year in tough years and in more of the celebratory vintages?
Yeah, definitely the Cabernet for me. Well, we do have the single vineyards, and they always, they represent that block, that bit of dirt and the DNA of that vineyard in that year. But when you're putting blends together, particularly in bigger blends like our Black Label Cabernet, I love, and the reserves, which is also a blend, I love putting those together. Yeah, because you've got a lot of components that you're dealing with, and you're trying, as we mentioned before, not to try and overdo the winemaking, but to make sure that it's still true to that pretty pure sort of house style, and delivering, and you know, doing what you do, doing what you can with what the season delivers. Like, there's been a few years, for example, where we haven't made a reserve Cabernet. 2021 was the last year that we didn't make a reserve Cabernet, and that was a reasonably challenging year over here. It wasn't particularly cool, but it was quite humid and so on. So from that perspective, that was just great fun putting that blend together, making the decision not to make a reserve, but seeing all of that really, really good fruit cascade down and make a huge impact on our Black Label Cabernet, and being able to preserve, you know, the level of quality that you expect from that sort of wine. So yeah, now that's always challenging, those bigger blends, and lots of fun too. We tend to do it as a group. You know, we taste, whether I'm with a group or by myself, I only taste blind in the lab. But yeah, we'll look at all the components blind, have a chat, and then sort of do it stepwise, putting the blends together. And then as we go through it, we'll taste everything blind again. And yeah, just through, I think, a degree of repetition, looking at the wines over and over. It takes a little bit longer that way, but I think you come up with the right decision-making process when it comes to putting the blends together in the end.
And that's the funny thing too, isn't it, about, you know, declared vintages and when people are talking about hard years or tougher years, that's sometimes the time to, like you said, purchase wine. Like you said, some of this top fruit that would go into a much higher price tagged wine is then being utilized in all these other components. It kind of makes me think, gosh, that's the time to really kind of look at the wineries, chat and hear what they have to say, and maybe make some of your larger purchases.
Oh yeah. Well, in a funny kind of way, one of the other times I decided to do that, which raised a few eyebrows in the accounts department and the finance department, was 2016, which wasn't a bad vintage by any means, but some of our best blocks had just been flipped from spur printing to cane, and they can often take a year or two to sort of recover from that. So they weren't their usual sort of lofty standards on the bench. So we decided not to make a reserve in 2016. However, again, it's sometimes the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. When it was put together into the Black Label blend, that blend actually went on to win the Jimmy Watson. And that's probably one of the biggest achievements that certainly one of the most significant awards that we've ever won here at Xanadu. And, it was just quite incredible to think that by not making a reserve, we actually made a better wine.
I love that. I didn't actually know that about that. I mean, I obviously knew about that win, but I didn't know that that was the wine that went on to that's an amazing story, and must have been, a really amazing moment. Were you there? You obviously were there accepting the award on the day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was just hard to put it into words how exciting that was. And the only thing is I would love more of the people that were involved in making those wines to be there to help accept it with me. But it was, it was huge. And certainly raised the profile of Xanadu no end after having won that award.
Well, you've certainly kept on that track of keeping Xanadu in the limelight, that's for sure. In terms of Cabernet, it's had such an interesting ebb and flow in terms of when it's being drunk and who's drinking it. But it's always very reliable in that we've always made good Cabernet. What do you think some of the kind of mistakes people have made or kind of trends that have kind of affected Cabernet and its journey on who's drinking it in Australia?
Yeah, I don't think anybody makes mistakes, but you mean about making Cabernet or just drinking other things around Cabernet?
Yeah, because I think that a bit like our Chardonnay, you know, it's gone on a real journey, and I think we've always made great Cabernet in this country, but you definitely see times in and eras where people were perhaps using a little bit more oak or they were a little bit greener in style. I feel like we're in an amazing spot right now for Cabernet, and I feel like we're on the journey for it having a real renaissance in terms of it is being the kind of buzzword of what people are drinking. It always takes a few years to get there. But why do you think we're making great Cabernet at this time in Australia?
Yeah, I think we're at a point where we're just very comfortable in our skins. I think that, you know, looking at it from a Margaret River perspective, it's quite interesting to think that some of the wines that first put Margaret River on the map were Jimmy Watson Cabernets from Cape Mentelle in the early 80s. And those wines were quite herbal and sort of, you know, blackcurranty, methoxypyrazine, ribenery kind of things. But that was what was in vogue back then. Although it's quite interesting, I had a great conversation with Dave Honan a few years back where he hit the nail on the head, where he sort of said that, you know, a lot of the styles changed in the early to mid 90s, where, and it wasn't so much about just about, you know, this is the style of wine that we want to make, although there was a lot of people chasing sort of Parker points back then, but it was when bird nets became actually quite affordable. Prior to that, people were having to pick earlier, because if they didn't, the birds would hammer the vineyard. So, and that's probably a reflection of some of those more herbaceous sort of styles in the 70s and 80s. Once you got to the mid 90s, where people, you know, could net their fruit and actually let the fruit hang a lot longer. If you go through 50 years of Margaret River Cabernet, you find them go from those herbal notes in the mid 90s. They actually started to get really quite big, in some cases even jammy, which is not something that I would necessarily describe as a Margaret River Cabernet, but there were some really big wines through the mid to late 90s. And I think, you know, since then, the pendulum swung back a little bit, where people have become a lot more comfortable that you don't need to push the ripeness all the way, and there's nothing wrong with having some sort of leafy, bright, varietal characteristics. That's what makes Cabernet such a great variety, is that it's got this lovely freshness to it. So I think now with Cabernet and with Chardonnay, that there's a lovely, when I talk about being comfortable in your skin, it's like nobody's following a certain generic path. I wouldn't say that the pendulum's just, you know, plumb in the middle anymore. People are experiencing both ends of the spectrum, and I think that's what's great, because it gives you some sort of diversity. But I think relying on the freshness of fruit and having that purity, I think, is why the Cabernet in Australia is so, you know, is in such a good place at the moment, because most of them aren't overblown and they're not, you know, really skinny and mean and green. People are finding the better sites. And for me, one of the things with Cabernet is it's a constant. You know, other varieties come and go, but Cabernet is a constant from a Margaret River perspective and many other regions of the world. It's always the yardstick by which you measure the quality of the vintage, because they're such lovely age-worthy wines.
Mm. Yeah, they sure are. And what's the importance of blending? Because you produce some amazing Malbecs and some Merlots and Cab Franc in Margaret River. Why is that, you know, an important part of some of the wines that are made there?
Yeah, well, I think it's nice just to have a little spice rack there, as long as you don't, you know, when you're putting the blends together, like the Malbec can, you know, add some lovely spice and inky sort of, and sometimes peppery characteristics. PV's got this beautiful perfume and tannin. So I think it's nice to have this little spice rack of extra varieties that you can add, you know, layers and lovely, a bit of detail to the wine, different elements. But as long as you make, you know, very aware that when those blends go together, the Cabernet still needs to be the loudest voice, you know, and, you know, from trial and error, I've overdone it. You know, I fallen in love with Petit Verdot in the past and put too much into a blend and gone, ooh, note to self, maybe just keep it under 5 or 6% because you don't need a lot of it to really dominate. So it's, I think as long as it's, you know, in judicious amounts and that the Cabernet is still really is what's singing, it's quite nice to have those other varieties at your disposal when you're putting blends together.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that, and I agree with you. I think that if they're all of those other bits and pieces are adding to what Cabernet already offers, then they provide this amazing framework and support. But yeah, you're right. If there's too much, you start. I don't know. It gets a bit murky, or you kind of lose the way a little bit. I understand Petit Verdot though, because it's got these amazing kind of purpley blue florals that can be very alluring, can't they?
Oh, totally, yeah. Like we often do, because they're PV and Malbec, Petit Verdot, sorry, and Malbec are important parts of all of our top blends. We occasionally will do a 50 case make just for Celador, so people can see these individual components. But the Petit Verdot, yeah, like, it's so floral. I often talk about it like it's a grandma's handbag. It's kind of this handbag that's had 50 years worth of different perfumes in it, all this potpourri and rose petal and Turkish delight, and it's quite incredible the florals you get off it. And then once you taste it, though, it's got so much tannin. So it's one of those varieties that you really got to be. It can have a massive impact and with those beautiful sort of blue fruits and florals, but you definitely don't want to overdo it.
Grandma's handbag. Interesting. tell me a little bit about, you know, when you guys clock off, being that you are two amazing winemakers, what are you doing when you get home? Are you drinking the wines you made? Are you drinking wines from Margaret River? Is there a healthy competition between the two of you? I mean, what's the vibe there?
Oh no, there's no competition at all. We because of it's such a close-knit community, we often just do a lot of swaps with other people, and it's nice to try other people's wines. It's nice to keep your finger on the pulse and buy some wines from, you know, the East Coast as well and around the world. But it's just as well as, you know, having a wine or a beer or something after work, there's a lot of tasting groups within the winemaking community in Margaret River. So, you know, you're just as likely to find 10 winemakers all meeting up down at the Settlers Tavern, tasting a whole heap of blind wines in a tasting as any given day of the week. It's just fun. It's just fun to taste.
That's for sure. I can imagine Settlers definitely their wine list gets a very good workout when you all come down there. If you could only drink three beverages for the rest of your life, Glenn, what would they be and why?
Well, beer would have to be at the top of the list because, as everybody knows, it takes a lot of beer to make good wine. Are we talking varieties or just actual beverages?
Well, you can say whatever you like.
Well, obviously wine's got to be in there, and there's nothing nicer than having a good glass of Cabernet with a meal or a bubbly when you're celebrating or. Yeah, so it's been such a big part of my life that I don't think I could do without that. So beer and wine would be the top two of the list, and then I'd probably put a margarita in the mix as well because I don't know. There's something lovely and tangy, a salty margarita. Just it's a treat. So it's something just to, if I'm ever going to have a little bit of a treat, that's my go-to.
Such a good drink, isn't it? Especially on a hot day while you're surfside. I actually think margaritas are best, absolute best after scuba diving. There's something about having, you know, that salted rim after a good long dive while you're seaside that's, like, pretty epic, I think.
Yeah, totally. I love a margarita. And I love it when you can see that sort of lovely salty, tangy, it's a descriptor often used for Chardonnays as well, just that lovely tanginess, but that lovely briny kind of saline edge to it that just makes your mouth water just thinking about it.
Yeah, it's so very true. Well, it's been so nice to get to know you a little bit more. I'm surprised by the fact that your accent is pretty mellow these days. do you think that you'd ever go back and make some wine in Northland? I mean, they do make some pretty handy wines up there.
Oh yeah. I'd love to go back and have a look at that. But I think with family over here, I'm well and truly entrenched in Margaret River. It's always lovely to go home. I do feel as though when I catch up with my family and my brothers and all my mates, it's like a time warp and I've never left. But the opportunity to make wine all over the world would be great. But at the moment, just with children and family duties, I'm well and truly entrenched here in Margaret River.
That's crazy. Well, I'm really glad to hear it. I think that poor Northland, they've lost you forever, but we're thrilled that we've, like a lot of Australians do, we're thrilled to claim you as our own. it's been so lovely to have a chat. Thank you very much for telling us a little bit more about what you do. Keep on making those absolutely stellar wines and we'll keep on buying them. And thanks for joining me today.
No worries, Shantae. It was a pleasure.
This is Over a Glass. I'm Shantae Whale. Stay tuned for more stories from the world of wine and drinks. Listen in every Thursday on your podcast app. Follow us on Instagram @OverAGlassPod and contact us at overaglass@deepintheweeds.com.au.